Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. There's a chirping crisis in downtown Aspen that city officials are hoping will fly away.
It sounds a lot like a fire alarm or a fire drill or something, air raid.
And more empty buildings plague Aspen's commercial core as wealthy investment groups acquire real estate. Meanwhile, a group of Valley residents is attempting to stop a 37,000 square foot municipal office building from going up near Rio Grande Park. They argue the property was meant for something else.
Land use was originally planned for more housing, affordable housing.
In Garfield County, an unprecedented amount of fatalities have occurred in tragic accidents on the roadways in recent weeks. Also, the school district serving Basalt, Carbondale, and Glenwood is starting to provide housing for teachers.
The real takeaway here is that they are modeling something that other employers can do.
First, we discuss the news out of Aspen this week. In the studio, I have the editor of the Aspen Daily News, Curtis Wackerly, and the editor of the Aspen Times, David Krause. Thank you for joining me. Classic Aspen story. We're a little put out by the sounds happening on Main Street, which has now become quite the controversy. Both papers covered it. I went and got some sound to let people know what this sounds like. This is what people are hearing now when you push the crosswalk for walk across Main Street.
It sounds a lot like a fire alarm or a fire drill or something, air raid.
Yeah. So this is a CDOT project because Highway 82 is a state highway. And so CDOT has basically trumps the city when it comes to decision making.
Right, just because it's the state highway corridor. Main Street, of course, is part of State Highway 82, so CDOT controls that. It's really out of the city's jurisdiction, which is a little odd. I mean, that's our busiest street, and the city of Aspen has very little to do with its management, which, that's part of the reason why this is a story. These just showed up one day.
Right. Out of the blue, about a week ago.
Well, out of the blue to the community, the backstory is that there was, a visually impaired person who lives in town who notified the city that that this person did not believe they were in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act because there wasn't a safe way for them to cross Main Street, which, if you think about that and you're blind and you're trying to cross Main Street, I'm sure that's, that's not something that you should be taking for granted. And so when that happens, there's a legal requirement that you do something. So the city notifies CDOT since it is their street and CDOT maintains the crossings.
Right. So he complained to City Hall.
Right. And then these things showed up. And what level of input the city had on the design of the system, is a little unclear. It came out in that work session on Monday, which was interesting. They had this work session scheduled, and the mayor opens it up by saying, well, the first thing we're going to do is I brought in our public works director, and we're going to address the chirping birds crisis.
Well, I think that was because they, since it opened 2 weeks ago, they're getting flooded with complaints.
Right. So they had to address it.
And for anybody who hasn't come through there, it is a different sound for a crosswalk. Like Curtis said earlier, it's like a fire alarm more than a crosswalk. And it's odd because we have one a block down for Main Street, and it isn't nearly that, I don't want to say invasive, but certainly ear-piercing. And I can't imagine being in some of the offices next to the area, or being at the Jerome for that matter.
You wait for some fat cat to be in the presidential suite there on the corner of Mill and Main.
Yeah,
listening to that.
And it seemed that at first these things were going constantly, right? Even if no one had hit the button, if you're a pedestrian, you want to cross, it'll start the countdown on the light and give you the signal. It seemed that these were going on constantly, even if no one had activated the pedestrian crossing. The city came out at that work session and said they had gotten it switched so that it only happened when someone activated the button. I've heard that being disputed, and it seems like they're still going, even if there's no one standing there sometimes. Apparently, this is what was said in the meeting. It was this specific equipment was requested by the complaining party. They wanted this particular one. It's not just this person independently. They're working with some sort of agency that advocates on behalf for the disabled. And so who knows? Maybe this agency, you know, they have an interest in, you know, having this stuff out there that is really loud because they feel like it's safer. We don't know. So now, because it is CDOT's signal crossing of CDOT State Highway, it's up to CDOT to turn down the volume. And according to the city, that is not as easy as it sounds.
Sure. And we should be sensitive to people with disabilities who are requesting something like this. I mean, if that's what it takes for that person to walk across the street safely, sure, then we just have to put up with it.
Right.
And everybody just needs to just shut up about it, right?
Well, but I think the other part of it, though, is why don't you have it similar to the other one on Main Street, right? Why does this one need to be so much louder? I think that's the underlying issue, and it is a disruption for people in that area. And
that's what Ann Mullen's comment was, come on, guys, is this really, don't we have other issues we should be focused on other than the Main Street crosswalks?
This is such an Aspen issue.
But you know what, though? It is such an Aspen issue, and Main Street pedestrian safety is an issue every year.
It is interesting how noticeable it is. And I think that's where they're getting all the complaints and all the emails, you know, the council people, and why they had to address the crisis, like the mayor said Monday night, you know, just so people know they're actually talking about it. I think that's, you know, if there's anything you can do about it or not, at least they see that people are, you know, Steve and the council's at least figuring out what they can do about
it. How do they leave it? Did they say they were going to investigate or what?
City staff is continuing to work on it. They're reaching out to CDOT and seeing what can be done. You know, CDOT, of course, is a huge billion-dollar agency. They have a lot of other things going on. For example, the largest public infrastructure project in a generation on the Western Slope.
Right. That bridge thing.
Bridge thing.
I don't know how much they care about the decibel level of Aspen's traffic signals.
Right.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
I think it might be here to stay. You just have to get used to it.
I think they can get it turned down. I mean, I guess the question is, does the person and the agency representing the Americans with Disabilities side of this thing, are they going to drag their feet in and say, no, we think it needs to be very loud because that's what we need for safety? So that could be an interesting debate if that happens.
Switching to another topic of downtown Aspen, where it's a little bit more quiet, which is the retail buildings. Curtis, your paper had a story about the Boogies building sitting quiet, no activity in that, even though it's been was purchased by a equity group a couple years ago. And it just points out the whole issue of these buildings are sitting empty, many of them. You know, it's like with the Garfield and Hecht and other interests who own most of Hyman Avenue now for two blocks going to the east, those are all sitting empty as well. So you've done a couple of stories on this. That building, the Lego building, everybody likes to call it, which was referred to as the worst blight in downtown Aspen by every council candidate who was in the forums this past spring. Yeah.
That building is the epitome of the penthouse on stilts.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. So there's a clause on that building that you can't have basically anything fun.
No restaurants or bars
on
the ground floor. There's, I think, a yoga studio might be in there.
In the basement.
But there's a bunch of restrictions on the ground floor commercial spaces. So basically the only thing you can rent that out to is some sort of retail establishment. And I'm sure they're holding out for someone who's going to sign a big lease, you know, a big formula retail store since they're grandfathered in and the no chain store clause doesn't apply to them.
And you've got a penthouse that sold for over $25 million on top.
So what do they care?
There's not a big incentive to rent that out. Right. Same thing, you wrote a story about the no complaining building that's got a no complaining clause on the mall.
Right.
I remember covering that.
Right, when they redeveloped the building where Zocalito and Annette's Bake Shop are, CB Paws. I mean, there's the hair salon. There's four great little local businesses in this building that are going to become homeless. I spoke with the guy who bought that building, the No Complaining building.
Which is, you better explain to the listeners what that
is. Yeah, so when this project was in the middle, it's a little building in the middle of the Hyman Mall. It came in for a redevelopment. It was one of those projects when council banned new penthouses in the downtown core. the developers had 6 weeks to get their applications in. So we got
14 of them came in.
Yeah, I mean, right. We got like a half dozen, you know, applications that were clearly geared to beat this regulation. This was one of them. It got approved because the council basically had no choice. It was still coming in under the old land use code. But as they're approving it, you know, obviously it's distasteful to everyone that they have to approve this project that they just made illegal with their new law. And it's in the middle of a number of controversies involving other buildings in town where you had penthouse owners kind of making life miserable for restaurants and bars either directly below them or in the neighborhood because they didn't like the noise. They were calling the police, making noise complaints. There was a lawsuit that led to the closure of the Silver Queen restaurant and bar, if you remember that place.
Yeah, the old Syzygy on Hyman.
And so as this is going on, you have this project coming in, you know, seeking the exact type of scenario. So the council stuck a clause in the approval ordinance that basically says you will establish a covenant in this building. So whenever that, you know, whenever the real estate changes hands, the buyer has to acknowledge that they live in a commercial district and they shall not seek to, you know, impede lawful commercial functions or something. Right. I mean, it really has no teeth.
No complaining about commercial activity.
It really has no teeth. It might, I'm a little unclear if it means you can't have the restaurant ban like you have in the Hecht building, because that's a private covenant that everyone, you know, the condominium association agrees to, that says we're not going to allow restaurants, even though that's a legal use in the commercial core zone district. Maybe you couldn't have that in this building, right? But other than that, it's fairly toothless, because if someone is violating the noise ordinance, that penthouse owner can call the police and complain, and there's nothing that can stop them from doing that.
So is the analogy like buying a house on the number one tee box and then complaining when they mow it, the tee box at 5:45 in the morning?
Yep, right.
That's
much.
The analogy,
that's
right?
The analogy.
I mean, it's you break it down to that, it just is hard to to.
And to his credit, the buyer of this building, you know, says, well, yeah, I bought this because I want to live in this unit and I want to be downtown and I like being in the middle of the action.
Right.
So
the next
person
will
see what he thinks when Escobar is when there's like a brawl outside of Escobar.
Yeah, right. This summer. Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and David Kress, editor of the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. We now continue our conversation about Aspen's commercial core. The whole thing, so
Boogies is a little different just because this New York equity firm buys this property, you know, paid, what, $27 million?
$27 million
for it. I mean, yes, it is probably the most prominent retail street corner in Aspen. But their plan was to, and they have approval for this, to fully kind of gut the building, redevelop it, expand it so it takes advantage of its full lot size. It'll be, you know, it'll punch out the first and the second story, put in, you know, smaller retail units, and rent it out for $300 a square foot is what, you know, the real estate community was hearing. Was that's what this new owner wanted, which is a good $50 a foot over the highest commercial lease rate in town. So yeah, they definitely had dollar signs in their eyes. They're still waiting for the building permit to go through to do this work, to convert it into this, you know, into this fancy new retail establishment. And in the meantime, you know, the Boogies clothing store closed last summer. The space was empty for a number of months. They brought in a series of pop-up tenants this winter. You know, there were some cool uses in there, but all of them were ultimately short-lived. And now it's just empty. And the owners, you know, we left many messages with the owners of that building. They did not call us back. The real estate community is mum. You know, if they know of anything that's going on there, they're not talking. So it sure looks like it's just going to sit there, which is kind of a shame.
Well, especially through the summertime.
Right.
When you've got the high season.
You've got thousands of people walking by there every day.
Right, right. And it's interesting, and it goes to that overall, you know, look of the town when you have so many buildings that are empty. And people come in and visit, and they say, oh, well, it must be a pricing thing, which it is. But there are plenty of places around town that, you know, you're like, wow, why is that spot still empty?
Well, I would point to the Finbar space on the Hyman Avenue Mall. That has been empty now for this will be the third summer. And so that was bought by the Suki family and some investment partners.
So they're combining. You remember there's another space down there that
Speakeasy.
Used to be the whatever that club was called. So they're combining those two spaces into one bigger subterranean space that presumably will be for a restaurant. You can, if you walk by there, you can kind of see some work going on. But you know, there's no word on a tenant. It seems like the expectation on what a tenant can pay that the landlords tend to have for these restaurant spaces is maybe a little above what your average operator thinks it's worth. You know, you have this. You have a similar scenario in the building with the Ukrainians,
yes,
where Bootsy Bellows and the Ute City Grill used to be,
right on right? Hopkins mm-hmm. Avenue, Restaurant
no,
Row.
No,
that's where
you know,
it started.
Empty for two. You know, that space. This is the second summer that
they bought that all up.
That's a you know prime street level commercial restaurant space,
and they're happy to keep it empty.
Yeah, no sign of life.
So their 4 weeks that they come here are quieter.
Right.
It's kind of indicative of where this downtown is going right now, anyway. It's a lot of empty space.
But what's the resolution, right? Is that where we're pricing out the mom and pops like we've been writing about for a couple of months now?
Yeah.
And can you get somebody in here who wants to do a startup? You know, it's the biggest question in town, I think,
right,
as far as all that goes, is you have these storefronts. It doesn't look good, but you can't get them sold because the numbers just don't skew.
I mean, they obviously paid a lot. You know, when you pay that much for a property, you can't just give away the space at a bargain basement rate. But it makes you wonder that, you know, how much room is there even for the market to correct itself?
And the, you know, government really can't get involved in that. I mean, they tried with this chain store restriction, which is for new space, but that doesn't even matter. I mean,
right,
if the owner of the building can afford to not have it rented,
right,
it's easier for them. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it seems to be going. Meanwhile, we've got the only development that seems to be happening is from the government. You know, we've got everything torn up just north of Main Street, and a group of citizens has just turned in a petition with what they hope is enough signatures to stop a new city office building that would be facing the Rio Grande Park and Galena Plaza. Do you know what their actual effort is to stop? I mean, is it a legislative thing? Do you know?
It's because, if I'm not mistaken, it's because the land use was originally planned for more housing, affordable housing, and switching that. So Curtis could probably speak to that a little bit better.
Well,
it's Tony Kronberg.
It's Tony Kronberg. Whenever anyone wants to turn over a shovel of dirt in the vicinity of Rio Grande Park, she's usually there with a petition to stop it.
And she had the usual suspects with her.
Yeah.
Over the weekend at City Market.
Yeah, they managed to collect 750-some signatures over 3 days. They need 620 or so of those to be valid.
Yep.
The clerk and the city attorney are both gone, so we haven't had a determination if they got enough signatures, because, you know, whenever you get signatures, inevitably people will sign who aren't registered voters, so those get thrown out. The other issue, the city attorney has expressed, you know, some questioning as to whether or not this is a legally referable issue. The council approved this ordinance, you know, basically combining a couple of lots it owned so it could have this developable parcel on which to build its new city office building. You know, that was the land use action that was taken. And so there's a legal question as to whether or not that is something that qualifies, you know, for a citizen petition to be referred to the ballot. Tony's arguments as to why this is a bad project. She filed a lawsuit as well in district court, you know, saying the city council abused its discretion essentially in approving this project, because she points to a 2006 master plan effort that looked at this whole area's Galena Plaza zone and tried to plot the course for it. It had a number of ideas. It did speak to having mixed use affordable housing on this particular site. It talked about keeping the government offices in the downtown core, although it was vague on what that meant. Tony argues that means on the other side of Main Street. So she's looking for a judge to affirm her positions on these things, as well as the citizens to turn this back at the ballot box.
Two-prong approach.
Yep.
Right.
Thanks for coming in and taking the time, guys.
Nice to be with you both.
Appreciate it. Always a good time.
That was David Krauss, editor of the Aspen Times, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. And I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, host of Valley Roundup. I now go to the offices of the Glenwood Post-Independent, where I speak with features editor Carla Jean Whitley via Skype. Thank you for joining me.
Always glad to.
It seems like a very unprecedented number of fatalities that have occurred in Garfield County in the last, week and a half, 2 weeks?
Something like that. It's been a lot of deaths lately. It's really sad.
Yeah. So, and they've been all vehicular, correct?
Yes, I believe so. Everything that I know about, anyhow.
Right. So, I mean, they're all tragic, but perhaps the one that sticks out for people is the one that happened earlier this week, Sunday night into Monday morning. A 17-year-old who was a Carbondale resident was killed in an accident up, was it Thompson Creek Road?
Yes, and earlier this week, the driver was arrested and charged with vehicular homicide, in addition to several other things, two felony counts of a vehicular assault, driving under the influence, driving under restraint. And he also was charged with illegal possession or consumption of alcohol by a minor. So there are just multiple layers to this event. There were six young people in the wreck. The car was upside down in the creek at the bottom of a ravine, which was 200 feet deep. And the driver had apparently lost control while trying to pass another vehicle, and that was what sent the car rolling into the ravine.
Right. Very sad. I mean, so you've got a bunch of teenagers in a car. Every high school deals with a tragedy like this, and every mm-hmm. class where bad decisions are made, and, you know, nobody had their seatbelt on, right, in the car.
I believe that's correct.
So it's just one of those avoidable accidents.
Yeah. You know? It's heartbreaking to see, you know, when I teach college classes, my kids probably roll their eyes at me, but I always say to them, make good choices. And we all make bad choices at some point. This is a reminder of how significant those can be.
And the other ones that have happened, you had one, there was one in Rifle that was mm-hmm. A tractor versus a vehicle.
One of the men was from Craig, and the other was from Utah, 79 and 59 respectively, and they were both killed in this crash, which was on Colorado 13 near Rifle.
And then another one was in Silt. It was a motorcycle wreck. The driver's facing vehicular homicide.
That was a 36-year-old driver who wrecked in March, killed two motorcyclists. And so that vehicular homicide charge is the news, the new information. He was previously facing charges that included misdemeanor careless driving causing death.
Okay.
We don't have real specific information about what information that led to these elevated charges, but that is the news this week is that was... the charges were increased.
It's hard to keep track of all the headlines in your paper regarding all of these things.
Is.
You know, then there was the teen that's facing charges in a case that closed I-70. There was a headline that you had that, you know, one was killed in a Jeep rollover near Sweetwater Road, which is near Walcott?
And then a couple weekends ago, we had a pedestrian killed when he was struck by a vehicle.
Right. And that was just near McDonald's on Grand Avenue, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And that was not, I mean, the driver in that one was reportedly driving the speed limit, and investigators confirmed that the evidence was consistent with what he said. But just such a terrible series of events here.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in that last case you're talking about, wasn't his blood alcohol content level way above what be legal for driving?
Yes, the victim's blood alcohol level was really high.
Yeah.
There was no evidence that the driver was intoxicated or under the influence of anything else, but the victim's blood alcohol level was quite significant.
So with all of that, I mean, you've been reporting on these individually. Is there, I mean, do you do anything? You know, I know you had a headline recently about Garfield County accidental deaths doubling in 2016. Mm-hmm. I wonder what does to the stats now in 2017. It seems like a lot in the first 5 months of the year.
I think that's a great question to ask, because these incidents, you know, have occurred throughout the county and all in very different circumstances. But you do have to wonder, what is the bigger picture here? Is there something that we can learn and take away from this?
Yeah.
And I think those are questions that we should be asking, both as a community, but also as a team of reporters in the weeks to come.
You also had covered, just like we did, the school district in Carbondale and Garfield County had a bond that was passed a couple of years ago, and a big chunk of that is going toward teacher housing, and mm-hmm. they opened the lottery up for available units currently, and then the ones that are going to be built. The GPI did a little bit bigger story on that than we did. Why don't you tell us about what the current situation is there?
Sure. So there are several layers to this. So it has, of course, these bond funds, but the school district might go beyond those funds even to build out its approved 20-unit employee housing unit on 3rd Street in Carbondale. And there are a couple of different ways that they are looking at the possibility of doing that. The bond issue was approved a couple years ago, and $15 million was designated for the purchase or construction of housing for teachers, $5 million each in Glenwood, Carbondale, and Basalt. And the Carbondale units may, that's enough money to build 16 of the 20 that have already been approved. So the school district has about $750,000 in the bank from the sale of district property that the Carbondale Branch Library is now on. And so that's some of the money that is, you know, around. There is a lot of different ways they could look at it, but essentially what they're saying is that they can build those 4 units for which the bond money will not cover without having to go into any general fund reserves. There are also several other teacher housing projects that they're working on throughout the district, and I think that's a really exciting thing to read as a resident of this high-cost area. But they're looking at capping the rents for these units at 26% to 30% of the household income. And that can either be a teacher living alone or a teacher with another adult, whether that's a spouse or a roommate. So they're really taking some steps there to increase the availability of that housing.
Right. And, you know, it's when we did the story last week, I mean, the demand is huge. I mean, there's already more people applying in the lottery than there are available units. I mean, this is just going to put a small dent in the demand. Mm-hmm. And there's talk of this regional housing authority that would handle affordable housing for the entire valley. And that needed to happen 15 years ago. So at least the school district is taking the bull by the horns finally and doing this, and it's kind of, I think, a good message to employers and other entities that you kind of have to solve this problem on your own too.
Right. And, you know, there's of course a part of me that looks at this and is like, man, maybe I should be a teacher. You know, the real takeaway here is that they are modeling something that other employers can do to improve the circumstances throughout this valley. And I am, as I'm sure you are, really interested to see what that looks like over the long term.
For sure. All right. Well, thank you for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Always glad to.
That was Carla Jean Whitley, features editor of the Glenwood Post Independent, speaking with me via Skype. Thanks to her and my other guests this week, Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and David Krause, editor of the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.